The title of this session is Doubling Your Brain Power, and this is perhaps the most exciting session that we've had the opportunity to talk about, and it's based on our understanding and based on our discovery that every human being is born as a genius. Every single one of us has enormous untapped reserves of creativity which we habitually fail to use. And the purpose of this session is to explain to you some of the aspects of your own creativity and show you how to get far, far more out of yourself. We know that in terms of goal setting, in terms of planning for the future, in terms of our aspirations for our income and the things that we want to accomplish, that we can never have any more than we have today simply by sweating harder. The old days where the basic rule was that you worked harder and harder and you hammered away, and if you weren't getting results, what you did is you worked harder still, have been passed over. And today we know that we live in a totally creative world and that everything that we have today is as a result of the efficiency with which we use our minds. We mentioned this before, that everything that we have tomorrow is going to be as a result of how we use our creative capacity. The amount of creativity we use is very closely connected to our self-concept and to our attitudes toward ourselves as creative persons. Every child is born with remarkable aspects of creativity. As a matter of fact, in some of the studies they've looked at, they find that 95% of children tested between the ages of 2 and 4 test out as highly creative. Highly creative in that they are imaginative, they're innovative, they're curious, they have tremendous capacities for abstract reasoning and for creating imaginary images. Testing the same children at the age of 7 years, they test out at only 4% creative. In the period between the early years and age 7, children are continually discouraged over and over again from being creative and innovative and letting their imaginations run rampant. Children are continually told that that's foolish or that's silly or you have to color between the lines or don't touch that, smell that, taste this, get into that. And children gradually learn at a deep subconscious level that it's not smart to get off of the beaten track. It's not smart to try to look or touch or taste or feel things that mommy and daddy don't approve of. The wonderful thing about creativity is that it's subject to another law which we call the law of use. The law of use simply says that with any human faculty, we either use it or lose it. The creative faculty, however, is never totally lost. What happens is that it goes underground and becomes a latent talent or capability of the human mind, and that we can begin to use our creativity again any time in life that we so decide. The purpose of this course is to show us how to trigger it, how to stimulate it, and how to get far more out of it. As a matter of fact, it's been said that necessity is the mother of invention, and if that's so, then creativity is the father. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that we live in the lap of an immense intelligence. And he described this immense intelligence as though it were an ether that surrounded the earth, like a huge mainframe computer into which every one of us can tap. This has been called throughout all of history things like the oversoul or infinite intelligence or the universal subconscious mind or the collective unconscious. And we are going to talk about this aspect of human creativity as the superconscious mind. This superconscious mind is so much vaster than our own individual intelligence, and it is something that we use on a random and haphazard basis all the time. If you've ever had the experience of being working on a problem or trying to achieve a goal or being wrestling with some dilemma, and as you're walking along or driving along, an idea shoots into your mind like a bolt and it's the perfect idea? Or have you ever had the example, for instance, where you have been thinking about someone and they telephone you, and the phone rings and it's them. Or you've called someone else and they say, I was just thinking about you just when you telephoned. We have examples of this all the time, where we have these almost unearthly bolts from the blue that seem to indicate that we have the ability to tap into a different form of intelligence than anything that is taught in the textbooks. And the purpose of this session is to explain how this works, because by using this superconscious capability, we find that we can dramatically improve the quality of our results and move faster toward the achievement of our goals than by using any other human faculty. There's a book by Richard Buck called Cosmic Consciousness, where Buck goes back over several hundred years of the most creative men and women of all time and finds that virtually every single one of them spoke about in their writings of an ability to tap into a higher form of consciousness. This superconscious mind is characterized by some of the following things. First of all, it's the source of all pure creativity. All great creative geniuses, all great innovations, all major breakthroughs in human history have come as the result of superconscious functioning. Some of the people who have written about using the superconscious functioning are, for instance, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Emerson said that he never wrote anything of his own volition, but he just simply acted as a conduit for this oversoul or this infinite intelligence, and it would pour through him and the words would flow out onto paper, word perfect, come through his brain almost as if he were tapped into an unearthly power source. Mozart, for instance, considered the greatest musician of all time, wrote his music note perfect the first time. When he sat down to write, he said the entire music, the entire symphony, the entire opus would come into his mind and he would simply transcribe it onto paper. And people who have read Mozart's music, even at the time he was writing, said it was the most beautiful music ever written down on paper. And he wrote it without corrections, without changes, note perfect the very first time. Beethoven was deaf from the age of 35. Most of his great works were written after he was totally deaf. And Beethoven also said that the symphonies came full-blown into his mind and he just simply transcribed them on paper. Edison, the greatest inventor of the modern age, used this superconscious capability over and over again to tap into a higher power and used it for coming up with inventions and insights and so on. Michael Faraday, considered the father of electromagnetic field theory, an uneducated man who had tremendous abilities to use this superconscious capability and pioneered the work that led to the development of the vacuum tube by DeForest, which led to the radio industry, the television industry, the electronic industry, the transistor, microelectronics, the microelectronic chip. All of it came to Faraday 100 years ago in a dream. The entire set of principles came to him in a dream, and he got up in the middle of the night and he sat down and he wrote page after page after page of scientific formulations, which later, when taken down to the laboratory and tested, were found to be absolutely, perfectly precise and brand new in all of human history. They had never been written or discovered or worked out before. Every one of us has had the occasion of using this superconscious creativity where we're going through our day-to-day lives and we see a product or a service that we think should be used or think that somebody should be producing, and we say, I wonder why somebody doesn't offer that, or I wonder why somebody doesn't invent that. And then 2 or 3 or 4 years later, we see a major corporation comes out with exactly the product that we thought of and goes on to make millions and millions of dollars. The difficulty with our creativity is not that we do not have the same insights as the geniuses, but it's this one small distinction. The geniuses trust and believe in the value of their insights and in the value of the thoughts and the ideas that come to them, whereas we do not. We think of these ideas and we think, well, this idea can't be of any use. It came from me. It's my idea. And so we wait until see somebody else come up with the idea, which may not even be as good as the idea we originally had, and we say, isn't that person intelligent? Look what a wonderful idea they've come up with. Well, many of us think that our creativity is limited by our IQ, that our creativity is limited by the years of education we had or the grades that we got in school, that somehow creativity is something that only scientists and artists and musicians and painters have, or poets or writers. The fact of the matter is that creativity is a very simple concept. And to boil it down to its simplest words is that all creativity is simply a way of improving on the existing way of doing things. Every creativity is an improvement, and to the degree to which we have the ability to find ways to improve the way that we do things in any area, we are creative individuals. And the more we use our creativity, like the more we use a muscle, the more of it we have. Another characteristic of this superconscious capability or this superconscious mind is that when it computes for us, it has access to all data stored in our subconscious mind, and it has the ability to discriminate between valid and invalid data. In other words, when we program a goal or a problem into our subconscious minds and ask the subconscious mind to solve it for us, the subconscious mind passes it on to the superconscious capability. The superconscious capability, when it computes and calculates to solve the problem or give us ideas to help us move toward our goal, has the ability to take all of the data that we have taken in the course of our lifetime and stored in the subconscious mind and sort out from that data what is valid and what is true and discard the rest when it computes. That's why whenever you get an idea, whenever you get one of these flashes that come into your mind that answers a question perfectly, you will find that in every single case the answer is correct in every detail. Another characteristic of this superconscious capability is that it brings us ideas that lie outside of our own individual experience. Very often we will get ideas that are totally new and that come totally from outside the experience, the education, the knowledge that we've had in the past. This is why most of the great breakthroughs in science and technology today are coming from small corporations, individuals working in private research laboratories. Very few of the major breakthroughs come from the big companies. The big companies will take the major breakthroughs and develop them and commercialize them, but almost invariably, these major breakthroughs are coming from people sometimes who have not even been in the field before, but they'll get ideas and insights into doing things in a new or different way that are completely unique and original and that lead to the opening up of entire new industries. It reminds me of a story of a small boy who came to the scene of an accident. The police had cordoned off the road and a bridge where a truck driving at 40 or 50 miles an hour had tried to drive under the bridge and become stuck underneath the bridge. And the traffic was cordoned off, and there were several tow trucks trying to pull the truck out from under the bridge. And the little boy came to the edge of the crowd, and he asked the policeman, he said, "What's going on?" And the policeman said, "Well, the truck is stuck under the bridge." He said, "What are they doing?" He said, "They're trying to pull it out." And they just weren't able to pull it out. The truck was too solidly jammed under the bridge. So the little boy looked past the policeman and looked up at him and said, "Why don't they let the air out of the tires?" And the policeman looked down at him, and he looked back at all those grown men trying to pull this truck out from under the bridge, and he shook his head and went back down the hill. And that's exactly what they did. They let the air out of the tires, and the truck just backed out as easy as pie. The little boy had the ability to see things from a different perspective, and every single one of us has that capability. The superconscious mind is the source of all creativity, all intuition, all flashes of insight, all hunches. The superconscious mind is the source of inspiration and motivation and the ability to see things in a brand new way. The superconscious mind is the source of new ideas that help us move toward goal attainment. And the superconscious mind is available to each one of us like a power source that we can plug into simply by finding the plug. Another characteristic of the superconscious mind is that it functions on a non-conscious level 24 hours per day. It is always working to resolve the problems that we are mulling over and to move us toward achieving the goals that we have programmed into the subconscious. Another characteristic of the superconscious is that it's capable of goal-oriented motivation. For goal-oriented motivation, it requires clear, specific goals. Now, you can imagine using this superconscious capability. Imagine that you had an enormous computer, the most complex computer, the most sophisticated computer ever built in the universe, and you had an entire team of the most accomplished computer experts that had ever been trained, and they were at your service. And you could go to them with any problem or any goal, and they could put it into the computer, and they could give you the answer, or they could give you the ideas that you would need to achieve the goal. Nonetheless, even with the most sophisticated computer and the most intelligent computer operators, there is nothing that they could do if you could not define the problem for them or if you could not clearly tell them what it is that you wanted to accomplish. This is why we talked before about how important it is to have a very clear, specific idea of the goals that we want to accomplish. The superconscious mind is invariably triggered by clarity of definition and by decisiveness. The more decisive and clear we are about what we want to accomplish, what problems we want to resolve, the more rapidly the superconscious capability goes to work to bring the answers into our lives. Another characteristic of the superconscious mind in terms of goal-oriented motivation is that it releases ideas and energy for goal attainment. If ever you've had the experience of working on something that you were really excited about, that you were really emotionally involved in, something that you really wanted, or something that really inspired you, you will remember that at that point, you seem to have a continuous flow of ideas and energy. You seem to be bubbling with energy. Sometimes you could go on only 4 or 5 hours sleep a night. Sometimes your mind would just crackle with ideas, and you had this feeling of continuous excitement, like sometimes you could barely sleep. This is an example of superconscious energy. It releases free energy from the atmosphere and makes it available to us to enable us to move toward goal attainment. And we'll explain that a little bit more as we go along. Another characteristic of the superconscious is that it responds to clear authoritative commands. And the clear authoritative commands we give to our superconscious capability are in the form of positive affirmations. Every time we affirm positively from the conscious mind to the subconscious mind, we trigger the superconscious mind into action. That's why whenever we say, I like myself, I feel terrific, I earn $50,000 a year, these strong emotionalized affirmations drive down into the subconscious and trigger the superconscious into action. That's why we find that men and women who are continually talking and thinking in an excited, positive way about the goals that they want to accomplish seem to have a continuous stream of energy, enthusiasm, and ideas that move them toward the accomplishment of those goals. In the Bible it says, "To him who hath shall more be given, to him who hath not, even that which he hath shall be taken away." And it means that to those who are excited and positive and moving toward the accomplishment of their goals, they get even more energy and more ideas and more creativity. To those who are going nowhere, who have very few ideas or have no goals, even that energy that they have is drained away and they become tired and depressed and fatigued. Another characteristic of the superconscious mind is that it automatically and continuously solves every problem on the pathway to your goal. No matter how far the goal is, no matter how distant, as long as the goal is clear, the superconscious will give you every single idea and solution that you need in the exact order that you need it. That once you have programmed the goal in and take the first step, you will find that the superconscious will give you the first step to take, it will solve the first problem, and when you implement the solution, it will give you the next step, it will solve the next problem, it will give you the following step, it will solve the following problem, and all you have to do is take it one step at a time, and at every step along the way, as long as the goal is clear, the problem will come to you. Another characteristic of the superconscious is that it operates best in a spirit of faith and acceptance, which means that the harder you don't try, the more rapidly the superconscious brings you the ideas and the solutions that you require to achieve the goals that you've programmed into the subconscious. In all creative work, mental effort defeats itself. Creativity cannot be forced. Creativity invariably favors the relaxed mind. When we talked in mental programming about how important it is to relax, to take a deep breath, to get a clear mental picture of what you want to accomplish, and just absolutely believe with complete confidence that if you can keep that clear mental picture, that it will come to you exactly when you are ready for it. This superconscious capability, the more you believe in it, the more you absolutely trust that you are moving in the direction of your goal and that your goal is moving toward you simultaneously, the more rapidly it seems to work. The harder you try to force it, the less effective it is. In the Bible, again, it says, "Whatsoever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye have it, and you will have it." This is one of the most powerful admonitions to self-confidence and to positive thinking, that if you absolutely believe that you already have the goal as achieved and just confidently expect each step to take care of itself, that's what triggers the superconscious into working. Another capacity is that the superconscious grows in capability as it is used and believed in. The more that we absolutely believe that it is working for us, the more rapidly it works. And you'll find a very interesting thing. When you begin using this superconscious capability, it's the same as getting a muscle into shape. If you have not done physical exercise for a period of time, it'll take a while before you limber up and loosen up and are able to use your muscles in a particular sport. When you have warmed up and when you have gotten yourself into good physical condition, you find that you can play longer, you can engage in the sport for hours without fatigue, that you can do more and more with greater and greater flexibility and adaptability. It's the same way with the superconscious capability. The more you use it, the faster it works and the better it works until it finally gets to the point where you can think of a goal or put a problem into the superconscious and you'll get a response sometimes within minutes, sometimes so fast that it will absolutely stagger you. By the way, Dr. Joyce Brothers calls this flow of superconscious creativity just by the words flow. And whenever an individual has been working on a creative project, and many people who have to write proposals or write reports or write term papers have had the experience of sitting down to work at a term paper or to work on a proposal, and suddenly something clicks in their mind and the words begin to flow, and they begin to flow line after line after line and page after page, and it seems that you can write the whole proposal from beginning to end almost without notes, and when you're finished, it's word perfect. Many of the great poems and the great stories and the great songs, many of the great creations of human history have been written or constructed word perfect the very first time. And this is all an example of this superconscious capability that's available to all of us. Another capability of the superconscious mind is that it has the ability to take us through the lessons that we need to learn in order to achieve the goal. We know, for instance, that the subconscious mind will take a goal and will go to work to move us toward that goal, very much the way a torpedo, once it is aimed at a particular target and fired, the torpedo will move toward the target, will take sonar blips from the target that feed back to it, and will correct its course, and no matter where the target goes, the torpedo will hit the target. The superconscious will do this also, but the superconscious has one additional unique capacity, and it is this. We can program our goal or target into our mind, into our superconscious capability, and as long as we have a very clear idea of what it is we want to accomplish, we can then fire off our mental torpedo into the air, and the superconscious has the ability to seek out and find the target, even though we have no idea where it is when we begin moving toward it. While we are moving toward this target, the superconscious, especially if we have set a goal or target that is very high for us, the superconscious will take us through the lessons necessary to enable us to accomplish that goal. It will take us over hurdles. It will take us through mistakes, through obstacles, through setbacks, through disappointments, through stumbling blocks, if you like, every one of which has been put there to teach us a valuable lesson to enable us to reach our ultimate goal. We've all had the experience of having unfortunate or unhappy things happen to us in our lives. And then later, in retrospect, we look back and we say, boy, wasn't it fortunate that that happened at that time? Because if that hadn't happened, this wouldn't have happened, and this wouldn't have happened, and we wouldn't have arrived here, which is where we wanted to end up in the first place. Have you had that experience? It's a very normal experience that we look back in retrospect on unfortunate occurrences and we say, boy, it was lucky that happened, because if it hadn't happened, I wouldn't have achieved the happiness or the success that I've achieved today. On the David Susskind Show a few years ago, they had four young men who had earned $1 million before the age of 35. And in talking to these young men, they asked them how many different careers or businesses they had been in before they had reached the business that enabled them to become financially independent at a young age. And it turned out that they had each been in an average of 18 businesses before they reached the one that enabled them to be financially successful. Now, the logical question is this. Did they fail in 17 businesses? Because that's what happened. They went in and out of 17 businesses or careers before they found the 18th one. What was the purpose of each of those 17 businesses on average? Wasn't it to teach them the essential lessons that they had to learn if they wanted to become millionaires in their mid-30s? Of course. Now, the difference between winners and losers is simply this. Winners accept and believe absolutely that they are fated and destined to be successful, and that every single thing that happens between where they start and their ultimate success is either a step forward or a valuable lesson that has been sent to them to teach them something that will enable them to be ultimately successful. The losers set off with sometimes high goals and high ambitions, but whenever they reach disappointments and setbacks, they quit or they deviate or they scrap their goals or they settle for something far, far less. The winners take every single challenge, every single hurdle, every single difficulty and say, all right, this has been sent to teach me something really valuable. This is part of the process that prepares me and equips me for achieving my ultimate goal. So what can I learn from it? And that's the distinct difference. And if you absolutely believe that you are fated to be successful, then just simply confidently expect that every single thing that happens to you is happening to you for your benefit. It is up to you to find the benefit that's hidden within it. And again, Napoleon Hill, who calls the superconscious mind the infinite intelligence in his writing, simply said that within every setback or obstacle or disadvantage, there is the seed of an equal or opposite or greater advantage or benefit, and that the successful man or woman always looks for the advantage or benefit in every situation, and lo and behold, they always find it. Because as long as you're looking for the obstacle or benefit, you cannot be seen or worrying about the negative event or the setback. The next characteristic of the superconscious mind, which is terribly important to us, is that it makes all of our words and actions and their effects fit a pattern consistent with our self-concepts, with our current programming, and with the goals that we are trying to accomplish. What this means is that when we have a very clear idea of what it is that we want to achieve, especially in a social or a business situation, the superconscious mind will make everything that we say and everything that we do exactly appropriate to what we're trying to accomplish. Flip Wilson used to say that when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not. And we've all had the experience of being in a situation where we simply couldn't say or do the wrong thing. It seemed that everything that came out of our mouth or everything that we did was exactly right for the situation, and it felt perfect, and it flowed naturally, and it was all in complete harmony with the goal or the objective that we wished to attain. We've all had that experience. Psychologists who have a great difficulty dealing with this idea of superconscious creativity because it cannot be duplicated in the laboratory have two expressions for it. One is called serendipity. Serendipity is considered to be the ability to find happy events, to go through life and find a series of happy coincidences that occur to one. And another expression that they use is what is called synchronicity, when several events conspire together, seemingly totally unrelated, and yet when they meet together, they form a pattern or bring us the result or a solution that we were looking for. And we've all had the occasion where a whole series of things seem to conspire together into a happy coincidence, where a series of events conspire together to bring us the goal, to bring us the solution, to bring us the thing that we were looking for. This synchronicity or serendipitous series of events is simply another functioning of the superconscious mind. Another factor in superconscious functioning is that the superconscious mind functions best under two conditions. It functions best when the conscious mind is working with 100% concentration on solving the problem or achieving the goal. Very often, when we are totally concentrated on accomplishing one specific important thing, the ideas that we need will flash into our minds. The other time that the superconscious mind works is when the conscious mind is completely elsewhere, when we are thinking of something else totally separate and apart from the problem or the goal that we're working on. Very often we'll be driving along or going for a walk or listening to a piece of music or even in the middle of a conversation, the idea or the answer that we have been searching for will shoot into our mind with crystal clarity. The superconscious mind does not function when we are mulling over our problems or our goals. The superconscious mind only works when we are concentrating totally or when we're not thinking about it at all. So it is a very good idea to try both on every problem, to try both on every goal, and I'll give you some methods to do that in a couple of minutes. The superconscious mind also contains all monitor circuits, which means that we can use the superconscious for pre-programming. Many people have the ability to wake up in the morning without an alarm clock. This is an ability that everybody has. They can program their mind to wake up within 1 minute of a particular time, whether it's in a pitch-black room, whether they've gone to bed early or late, whether they have crossed time zones, and every single time their mind goes off like a little alarm clock and wakes them at exactly the precise moment that they've programmed into it. As a matter of fact, nobody needs alarm clocks. The only reason we use alarm clocks is because we doubt this superconscious capability. Has anybody ever wondered why this works? Thousands of people don't use alarm clocks, but they very seldom sit down and say, well, why is this? Why is it that it's possible to program this time so clearly into my mind and wake up within a minute of that time? Another way that you can use this superconscious capability is in getting parking spots. Many people can get parking spots 20 out of 20 times on crowded city streets. My wife, for instance, has a series of things that she does in a given day, banks that she visits and stores and so on. Because we have two small children, it's not convenient to park way out in the parking lot or a long way from the entrance to these stores or shopping centers. So she has a particular parking stall in front of each place that she's going to, which she visualizes. And even on a very busy day, when she arrives there, somebody is holding the parking stall for her. And just as she arrives, not one car earlier, not one car later, the person who's holding the parking stall backs out and drives away. Anybody can use this to get parking stalls. I personally can get two parking stalls on a downtown street in any city in North America. You can develop it to the capability where you can win bets on it. All you do is clearly visualize a parking stall in front of the building where you want to park, and you will find that each time that you arrive there, to the degree to which you absolutely believe it will be there, the parking stall will be there. And I've had thousands of people tell me that they've been doing this for years, and their friends are just so outraged and irritated because they can do it every single time. And they absolutely believe, and this is very, very important, The degree of belief and confidence that we have in this superconscious functioning is the exact degree to which it functions. If our belief is total, the superconscious mind functions totally and continuously. If our belief is half, then it functions half the time. If our belief is 10%, it only functions 10% of the time. It's totally controlled by our own minds. With regard to pre-programming the computer, you can remind yourself to make a phone call at a certain time. You can remind yourself to take something from home to the office or from work to home. You can remind yourself to drop off something or pick up something. You can program it in and just tell the superconscious to remind you at exactly the right moment. And at exactly the right moment, just as you're passing the item or passing the telephone or passing the store, the idea will shoot into your brain to remind you to pick it up, make the phone call, drop it off, or whatever it happens to be. The superconscious mind has its own separate computer, which will bring you exactly the answer that you require to solve your problem or achieve your goal at exactly the right time for you. The superconscious mind knows the time better than you do, and the most important thing you can do is that when the answer comes to you, you must act on it immediately. You must immediately implement the intuition or the flash of insight or the idea or the answer that comes to you. Many times we've had the occasion where we've been working on a problem or a goal and we've gotten an idea of something to do and we've said, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, or I'll get on that first thing in the morning, or that's a good idea, but I'll start on it on Monday. And when we start on it on Monday, we find that it's too late, that when we call the person or we do the thing, we find that the person says, geez, I wish you'd called me last week because I had exactly the solution that you required. So when you have programmed a goal into the superconscious mind and you get an intuitive flash or an idea of what to do to move yourself toward the goal, it's absolutely essential that you act on it immediately, without hesitation. Pick up the phone, develop that sense of urgency, and move on it quickly. Sometimes it is only seconds or minutes away from being too soon or too late. And when you get those golden gems of superconscious insight, it's very important that you act instantly. And the more rapidly you act on those insights, the more insights that you'll get. And I've seen businessmen who have no other competence or ability at all except an ability to trust to the superconscious capability and to act instantaneously every single time they get an answer, build enormous fortunes and become outrageously successful, irrespective of lack of education, lack of intelligence, lack of any other ability, lack of any benefits or advantages. By simply plugging into the superconscious capability, they've gotten all the answers that they required to build enormous companies. The basic operating principle of the superconscious mind is this. Any thought, plan, goal, or idea held continuously in the conscious mind must be brought into reality by the superconscious mind. Any thought, plan, or goal held continuously in the conscious mind must be brought into our lives and into our experience and into our reality by the superconscious mind, whether positive or negative. And this is why it is so extremely important for us to always keep our mind focused on what we want to happen and to talk and think and visualize and imagine only that which we desire to come into our lives, because our lives are nothing more than the outpicturing or expression of our continuous conscious thoughts. And you'll find that in the experience of every successful man or woman who has ever lived, that they have sooner or later developed the habit of keeping their mind rigorously disciplined and focused on what they want to happen rather than on what they fear. Because if we think continuously about what we fear, if we think continuously about what we don't want to happen, we bring that into our lives by the same irrevocable, immutable law that we bring good things into our lives. So we must consciously and deliberately and systematically exclude all thoughts from our conscious mind that we do not want to bring into our reality. We must not talk about the things we fear. We must not think about them. We must not write about them. We must not dwell upon them or read about them. We must only think of what we want to happen, because we are dealing with the most powerful single force in nature, your own individual human brain, which can tap into this superconscious power source and bring us anything that we want in life. Any thought, plan, goal, or idea held continuously in your conscious mind must be brought into reality by the superconscious. The only question is, do you have the discipline and the control and the perseverance and the persistence and the determination to hold your goal, your ambition, your aspiration clearly in your mind long enough for it to come into reality. That's the only thing that you have to do, and everything else will take care of itself by immutable law. This is the most important encapsulation of the laws of success that you will ever hear. The question then naturally arises, how do we stimulate superconscious creativity? Well, superconscious creativity basically is stimulated by one of three things: clear, specific goals to which we are totally committed, pressing problems, which are extremely important for us to resolve, or relevant questions that we ask of ourselves and of other people and of our situations. Any one of these three will stimulate and trigger superconscious answers. I would like to give you now, though, six techniques for stimulating creativity, three passive techniques and three active techniques. And if you use these techniques on a regular basis, you can double and triple the quality of your results, double and triple your effectiveness, and move yourself so rapidly toward the accomplishment of your important goals that you will simply not believe the difference. If you have not used these techniques before, I guarantee you that each time you use any one of them, you will get results, and sometimes you will get absolutely astonishing results. The first and simplest of all techniques is solitude. By solitude, we mean going into the silence, sitting down perfectly, quietly, still, and doing absolutely nothing for 30 to 60 minutes. This is one of the most beautiful and powerful ways to get answers to our problems that you will ever learn. The great majority of people in our society have never sat perfectly quietly for 30 to 60 minutes in their entire lives. The use of solitude has been talked about and written about and is practiced all over the world, and especially it is practiced by the most creative and the most brilliant men and women. Gandhi, for instance, one of the greatest politicians of the 20th century, spent from midnight on Sunday to midnight on Monday every single week in complete silence and complete solitude, not talking, not eating, not interacting with anybody, but sat perfectly silently. And he was able, with the ideas that came to him in that period of solitude, to literally revolutionize the British Empire and to free all of India from British rule. The way that you use solitude is this. First of all, by solitude we mean that we do not read, we do not smoke, we do not drink coffee, we do not get up and adjust pictures, we do not make notes, we do not listen to music, we sit perfectly still, perfectly silently for 30 to 60 minutes. If you have never done this before, the first 20 to 25 minutes will be one of the most difficult periods you've ever spent in your life. You will find yourself possessed of an irresistible urge to get up and to move around and to adjust and to stand up and sit down and to do something, to make telephone calls. It's very important that you resist this urge vigorously, because you will find at about the 20 to 25 minute mark that all of the fidgetiness, all of the antsiness, all of the need or desire to get up will suddenly fade away. And you will find that you will go completely calm and your mind will go crystal clear and you will feel a surge of energy and peace flowing through your whole body. And at a certain point, within a few minutes, your mind will begin to flow like a river of ideas. And the ideas and the answers to your most pressing problems or to your most important goals in your life at that moment will come to you in this period. And they will come to you every time, and they will come to you the first time you use this method. I have had thousands of people in the courses that we've given where I've asked, has anybody used this method before? And many people will raise their hands and say, I've used this method. And I'll say to them, is what I am saying true or not? And every single one of them says, absolutely true, that it's the most beautiful way of getting solutions to our problems and of getting in complete harmony with ourselves that you can ever find. So just sit quietly. Sometimes businessmen come to me and say, what do I do about this problem? What do I do about my partner? What do I do about the business? And what do I do about interest rates? I said, what you have to do is go and sit perfectly still for 30 to 60 minutes. And they say, well, no, I can't. I'm busy. I've got too much to do. I'm too behind. I'm too pressured. I said, that's exactly when you have to do it, is when you feel that you have the least time or the least opportunity to sit perfectly quietly, that's the time that you must discipline yourself to do it most rigorously. And if you were to sit quietly for 30 to 60 minutes each day without moving and just let your mind flow without trying, don't make any efforts at all to solve a problem or to concentrate or to focus on anything, just sit there in perfect peace, you will find that every single day you will get answers that are so powerful and ideas that are so valuable that you will shake your head at the number of years that have gone past where you've tried to do it the hard way. Many people say to me, well, I can't do that because I've got children screaming at home and there's people in the office and the telephone ringing and so on. What I do very often is I will pull into a park on my way home from work. Sometimes I will leave work a little bit earlier and I just go and sit in a park quietly where there's no traffic for 30 to 60 minutes in the car without moving, without listening to the radio, without doing anything. And every single time the answer will come. The most beautiful and the most perfect and the most appropriate answer that you need for any dilemma or situation or goal that you have will come to you. Even if you don't know what your goal should be, then ask the superconscious what your goal should be and then go and sit quietly and wait and listen for the answer. A second method to stimulate the superconscious is deep relaxation and meditation. Is to sit very, very quietly, close your eyes, breathe deeply, as we talked about in the session on programming, and count down from 50 to 1, or count down from 100 to 1 with your eyes closed, and just completely relax and let your mind go calm. And during that period of complete calmness, very often the idea will just flow into your mind. Or sometimes immediately after you have finished meditating, which usually takes about 10 to 20 minutes, you'll come naturally into full alertness, and as you open your eyes and sit there peacefully, the idea that you've been seeking will shoot into your mind. And then all you have to do is pick it up, almost like a flower that's landed in your hand, and implement the idea, and it will be the perfect solution for you, and it will be at exactly the right time. A third method, which is a passive method of stimulating superconscious creativity, is a method that has been used for many years by some of the most creative men and women of all of history, and that is surrounding yourself with a natural environment. Going for a walk quietly, sitting by the ocean is one of the most powerful ways to stimulate creativity, listening to the ocean waves pour in. There is a set of record albums called the Environments series, which has a whole set of environmental sounds, the ocean and birds singing and summer cornfield and running water and wood-masted sailboat and dawn at New Hope, which are perfect representations of natural environmental sounds. And sometimes just playing those sounds on a record player, on a tape player, will stimulate the superconscious mind. The human being is a creature of nature, and the closer we get back to nature in a relaxed way, the more rapidly and the better our minds work. And a final method, if you like, is listening to classical music, listening to beautiful classical music by Mozart and Beethoven and Bach and Stravinsky and Dvorak. Just letting the music play through the mind very often stimulates the entire brain and opens us up like a receiving station to superconscious ideas, insights, and intuitions. So these are passive methods that you can use. By the way, laughing often stimulates the superconscious mind. Physical exercise, vigorous aerobic exercise, often stimulates the superconscious mind. Simply sitting around talking in a friendly, open way with people that we love and trust, when we're completely relaxed, that also stimulates the superconscious mind. I'd like to give you three active ways of stimulating the superconscious mind, and these are ways that we have taught to executives of large corporations. They're very, very simple methods. They can be used in almost any situation, and some of them can be used individually, and some of them can be used in conjunction with others. The first method is very simple. It's what has come to be known as mind storming, as opposed to brainstorming. And mindstorming is an individual technique which Earl Nightingale describes in his classic tape series, Lead the Field. And it's one of the most powerful techniques, and more people have found solutions to achieving their goals and solving their problems using this method than perhaps any other method that's ever been used on a systematic basis. And it consists of sitting down quietly with a pad of paper and taking your major problem or goal and writing it at the top of the pad in the form of a question. For instance, the question that Earl Nightingale suggests, which is so excellent, is, how can I increase the value of my service to my customers today? And another question you could ask is, how can I use my time more efficiently today? Or how can I increase the sales of a particular product by 20% over the next 90 days? Any question or challenge facing you can be solved by writing it down in the form of a question and then forcing yourself to write 20 answers to that question, trying to make every answer as concrete as possible, but letting your mind flow freely and writing every single answer you can possibly think of. Write not only the answers, but write the opposite of the answers. One answer may be to spend more money. Another answer may be to spend less money. And one answer may be to work harder. Another answer may be to work smarter or to cut the amount of effort that you're putting into it altogether. But write down and force yourself to write out 20 answers to that question. And in the course of writing out those answers, you will find sometimes in the 17th, 18th, and in many cases, when we've done this course in corporations, we find that it is the 20th answer that is the perfect answer to the question at the top of the page. So it's absolutely essential that you force yourself to write 20 answers. The first 3 to 5 answers will come easily. The next 5 answers will be a little bit more difficult. The last 10 will cause you to dig deep, deep down into the mine of your own personal creativity. And the last 3 or 4 answers will often be the most precious and the most valuable of all. You can use this method to solve almost any problem that faces you. And if you use this method on a regular basis, you will get so many ideas, so many valuable ideas, that you will simply not have enough time in the day to do all the things that it's possible for you to do to move you toward the achievement of your goals. It's very important that once you've done this exercise, and the best time is first thing in the morning, once you've done this exercise, is to take at least one of the answers which you have generated and implement it immediately. There's no point in going through this valuable exercise if all you're going to do is take the answers and put them in your briefcase. Pick one answer, one solution, one step that you can take and implement it immediately and do that every single day. You will find, as I have found, that you can't do this every day. I couldn't do it every day because I came up with so many ideas to any particular question that it took me sometimes weeks to implement all of the ideas that I would come up with in one idea session. So use this to solve any problem that's facing you. The second active method for stimulating the superconscious mind is what we call the systematic problem-solving method. The systematic problem-solving method derives from our research into the characteristics of genius. And we have found that there are 3 basic characteristics of genius that hold true over all categories of genius and over all intelligence levels. Number one characteristic of genius is that geniuses have an ability to concentrate single-mindedly without diversion or distraction on one problem or question or goal at a time. People with greater intelligence but who never reach the genius levels of performance somehow lack the ability to concentrate single-mindedly. And single-minded concentration is a hallmark of all outstanding accomplishment. The second characteristic of all geniuses is that they have an ability to maintain a sense of wonder or naivety, an open mind that is flexible and adaptable and which looks at all possible ways of approaching a problem or question. They have tremendous fluidity in their thinking, and they refuse to leap to conclusions or to be dogmatic about any point. They're very, very willing to let go one solution and look at another, almost like a child walking in a garden, picking up one flower, picking up another flower, putting them down. They have a sense of wonder, which causes them to have this open, interested, childlike way of approaching their situations and difficulties. The third characteristic of all genius is that all geniuses have adopted a systematic method of problem solving. One of the problems of individuals who have very high intelligence but never aspire to genius levels is that they approach every problem differently. Geniuses approach every problem or question with a systematic approach, a step-by-step approach that enables them to isolate each part of the problem or situation to work progressively to a solution, which is usually the very best solution that can be followed. So I'd like to teach you a systematic method of problem solving, which was developed at Harvard University some years ago, and which is so simple and so effective in its use that it's almost disarming, as a matter of fact. It is simply this. We know that highly creative men and women have a tendency to approach every problem as though there were a logical, workable solution. People with lesser creativity, people who are more negative or underachievers, have a tendency to approach every problem as though it were an insurmountable obstacle and that why should this happen to me? Successful men and women approach the problem as though there were a logical, workable solution just waiting to be found, and they quite confidently, positively, expectantly look at the problem and say, now, what is the solution? Where is the solution? They begin to look for it. The second step that they take is that they control the use of language, and they change their language from negative to positive. And instead of calling a problem, which is a negative word and which stimulates negative feelings and negative reactions, they change their language and they call it a situation or a challenge or an opportunity. They say, well, we have some interesting challenges facing us, or we have a remarkable opportunity has occurred here. But at the very least, they say, we have a situation here that we have to deal with. But they don't call it a problem, because when you call it a situation, it clears your mind and keeps your mind calm. When you call it a problem, it causes you to become agitated and tense and anxious and impairs your ability to think effectively. We know, by the way, that all stress, all tension, all anxiety in dealing with the problems that we face on a day-to-day basis has the effect of shutting down parts of the brain, almost like turning off lights in the different rooms in a house. When we are anxious or fretful about a problem that we're facing, we actually turn off major parts of the brain, which are essential for problem solving. So the more relaxed, the more calm, the more positive we are toward any situation that we're facing, the more of our brain works for us and tunes us into not only conscious solutions, but superconscious solutions. The next step is to clearly define the worry situation in writing. Over 50% of all the things that we worry about can be resolved if we can clearly define them, crystallize them, and commit them on paper so that we can clearly see them. When using this situation to resolve corporate problems or family problems, it's a very good idea to have someone write out the situation that you're discussing clearly on a whiteboard or a flip chart or a blackboard so that everybody can see it, everybody can read it, and everybody agrees on exactly what it is you're talking about. Very often you find if there's five people discussing a particular situation, there's probably four different definitions of the situation. Once you write it down clearly and crisply, everybody can focus their mind on resolving it. The next stage is to ask yourself, what are all the possible causes of this situation? What are all the possible events or all the causes that could have triggered this situation, and itemize them one after the other in a list? Again, we find that another 25% of all situations can be resolved by clearly identifying the causative factors. In medicine, we know that accurate diagnosis is at least half the cure, that in many cases, if a person can go to a doctor and the doctor can identify what is causing the particular medical problem, that alone is enough to lead to a solution. Because if you can identify the causes, you can stop the causes. You can stop doing the things that are exacerbating the problem. The next step is to clearly identify all the possible solutions. What are all the different things that we can do to resolve this particular situation or this particular challenge that is facing us? Itemize them all, and itemize them without prejudgment and without evaluation. Just write down all the solutions, and remember, try to determine what is right before you determine what is possible. Don't wrestle with or worry about whether or not the solution is affordable, whether the solution has been used before, whether the solution is within your capability. Write out what is right, what would be the ideal thing to do in this situation, and then later worry about what is possible. From this point on, think and talk only about the solutions. The difference between positive thinkers and negative thinkers is very simple. Positive thinkers think and talk continually about solutions, and negative thinkers continually talk and think about problems. From this point onward, keep your mind and your conversation and all of your thoughts and activities focused on the various solutions that are possible, and stop rehashing and talking about and thinking about the problem. Keep your mind solution-focused rather than problem-focused. The next step is to make a decision. Once you've analyzed all the possible solutions, choose one or a combination of those solutions and make a decision. A clear, specific decision in a worry situation is far better than no decision at all. Many of our tensions, many of our stresses, and most of our situations and challenges can be resolved if we make very, very clear decisions. Even if the decision is not perfect, it's better than no decision at all. 80% of all decisions, by the way, should be made immediately, according to the research. Only 20% of decisions need to be delayed or put off or deferred. And if you have to put off a decision because you don't have enough information or you're not in a position to make a decision at this point, you can resolve the stress and worry that's involved by simply setting a deadline and saying, by Thursday at noon or some other time, I will make the decision irrespective of what information I have at that time. In either case, the stress goes out of the situation once that kind of a decision is made. The next step, of course, is to assign specific responsibility for implementing the solution. Many people get to the point of making a decision on what should be done, and then they just naturally assume that there is a logical sequence which will unfold and somehow the solution will be implemented. Assign specific responsibility. Who is to do it and to what standard and with what resources and in what way? And the final underlining point in systematic solution solving or solution finding is to set a deadline. When is it to be complete? And if you'll follow those in a systematic basis, always approach a problem logically, change your language from negative to positive, clearly define the problem situation or the challenge in writing, identify all the possible causes, identify all the possible solutions, make a decision, assign responsibility for implementing the decision, and set a deadline, you can get through more worry situations and get more accomplished in a day than the average corporation gets accomplished in a week. The final method of stimulating superconscious creativity is what is called brainstorming. Now, there are many books that are written on brainstorming, but the key elements of brainstorming are these. First of all, the ideal number for a brainstorming session is about 4 to 7 people. You can go anywhere from 2 people up to 12 people, but the ideal number is 4 to 7. Second of all, the ideal time period for a brainstorming session is about 30 to 45 minutes. The third thing to remember is that in a brainstorming session, you should concentrate on only one thing, and that is idea generation, which is generating the greatest number of ideas in the shortest period of time. In order to do this, in the brainstorming session, it is absolutely essential that there be no evaluation and no judgment of ideas whatever. Judgment and evaluation of ideas takes place at a second session, at a further session, at a subsequent session. But in the initial brainstorming session, the only thing that you do is generate the greatest number of ideas in the shortest period of time possible. Once the idea generation process begins, there should be one person who is the leader of the brainstorming session. This person is the one who encourages each person to contribute as much as possible. And one of the techniques which we teach is to have the leader go around the table and ask each person for their contribution. And if a person has no idea or no answer to contribute, what they simply say is pass, and it goes to the next person. This is usually only necessary in the first 3 to 5 minutes of a brainstorming session, because once it's gone around a couple of times, the ideas begin to flow like water. The next step is to appoint what we call a scribe, which is one of the people in the brainstorming session who quickly writes down the ideas as they're generated. This person can also contribute ideas, as can the leader, but these are their two specific responsibilities. Make the question that you are brainstorming as specific and as simple and as clear as possible. Many companies use brainstorming and they find that it doesn't work because the questions are so general that nobody can get their minds around them. For instance, they'll have a brainstorming session on how can we increase productivity or how can we increase sales, which are so general as to be incapable of resolution in brainstorming. So the question would be, how can we cut our administrative costs by 10% over the next 90 days? By increasing productivity in our administrative activities. Perfect question that enables people to think of how to cut costs and increase productivity in a particular segment. Or, how can we increase the sales of a particular product by 20% over the next 60 days? And that is the kind of concrete question that everybody can begin thinking about in a concrete way. Set a deadline on the session. Tell everybody that it's going to stop at a particular moment and have everybody focus on one thing, which is generating the maximum number of ideas. Encourage laughter, encourage ridiculous ideas, encourage funny ideas, and make no comments or statements or judgments on any of the ideas at all. Just go for the greatest possible quantity. In one case, in a 20-minute session, a group of 5 secretaries came up with 277 answers to one specific question on productivity. They came up with so many answers in such a short period of time that three of the five girls had to be scribes to write the answers down. They came up with more answers than any team of high-level executives that we have ever worked with in any corporation in America. And what is the greatest tragedy of all is that in every corporation that we work in, we find that the men and women who do the work, even at the lowest levels, the entry-level occupations, have so much to contribute, have so many ideas and so many thoughts on how things could be improved, that if upper-level management would just tap into these by stimulating and encouraging and holding regular brainstorming sessions, they would find that the progress that they make would just absolutely blow their brains. And every company that is now encouraging the regular use of brainstorming at all levels in the corporation is moving ahead of every other company in their industry. And by this, I mean companies like IBM and Hewlett-Packard and Fluor and Four Seasons Hotels and McDonald's. All of these companies use brainstormings at all levels, and it's one of the reasons why they're some of the most successful companies in the world. One other practice which can be used in business in the application of brainstorming is what is called market gap analysis. Market gap analysis is a very sophisticated process of idea generation that will help an organization come up with more ideas to increase their business and increase their sales than any other method that has yet been devised. And market gap analysis consists of forming a brainstorming session and then asking relevant questions such as the following. What new markets are there or can there be developed for our existing products? What new markets can we develop for our existing products? A second question is, what new products could be sold to our existing customers? A third question is, what different products could we distribute through our existing market channels? And a fourth question is, what needs do our customers have that aren't yet being satisfied? Promoting and encouraging this type of market gap analysis will often lead to major breakthroughs in markets, in products, in revenues, in sales, and of course in profits. Finally, let's talk about where a superconscious solution comes from. In our day-to-day life, we find that there are two major sources of superconscious solutions. Source number one is from intuition. We'll be going about our daily business, we'll be driving along, we'll be in a conversation, or we'll be working on a particular challenge that's facing us or a particular goal, and suddenly we will get an intuitive flash where the answer leaps into our minds almost like a shout, if you like. It's called the still small voice within. We get that feeling that the answer is perfectly correct. And by the way, whenever we have an intuitive feeling that something is right, it usually is right for us. And whenever we have an intuitive feeling that something is wrong, it means that it is wrong for us. And one of the smartest things that we can do is always listen to our intuition or to our gut feeling in making any major decision. As a matter of fact, in some of the most sophisticated and advanced works on corporate creativity, they recommend that you go through all of the idea generation processes, all of the evaluation process, all the market research, and when you have done all of the left brain research, then sit down very quietly and listen to your gut. And if your gut tells you to go ahead with it, then go ahead with it. But even with all the research, if your gut tells you not to do it, don't do it. The second source of superconscious insight is chance encounters. One of the things that we find about the superconscious mind is that it works often in a totally unpredictable and unforeseen manner. Sometimes somebody will telephone us, and in the course of the conversation, we'll find that they have the solution that we need. Sometimes we will open the newspaper or open a magazine, even a magazine that we never read, and there will be an article that is exactly the solution to the dilemma that we have. Sometimes we will meet somebody casually who will make a suggestion to us which will turn out to be the perfect solution to the major problem or challenge or goal that we're trying to accomplish. But be alert to these chance encounters. Be alert to the people that you run into that may have the solutions for you. Be alert to the written materials that you come across that may contain the answers, because almost invariably the answers come in ways that are totally unexpected, not in the ways that we would logically expect them to come. And finally, how do you tell a superconscious flash? How do you tell a superconscious idea? There are three things that occur when a superconscious idea comes into our mind. The first is that the idea will come into our mind 100% complete. It will be total in every respect. It will cover every single aspect of the problem and answer every single part of the dilemma. It will be a complete answer, not a partial answer or a fragmentary answer, and we will recognize it as being the ideal solution. The second way that you tell a superconscious solution is that it will be a blinding flash of the obvious. Almost in every case, it will be so obvious, so simple, that you will have the tendency to say, "Why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I think of that? It is so simple." The reason that you didn't think of it, by the way, is that it was either too early or that you were not ready for the answer. But when the solution does come that is so clear, that's this blinding flash of the obvious, that when it does come, it's exactly right for you, and the timing is exactly right also. And the third thing that occurs with the advent of a superconscious solution is that you will feel a burst of joy and energy, a feeling of elation and excitement, physically and mentally, that every superconscious solution comes accompanied with the energy, the inspiration, the motivation, and the excitement that causes you to want to implement it right now. It causes you to want to get up and do something about it right this minute. If ever you get a superconscious solution just before you go to sleep, which is very often where people get solutions, sometimes it will make you so excited you won't be able to sleep all night long. Many people, by the way, get superconscious solutions as they're falling asleep, when their conscious mind is dropping into alpha, or when they're waking up, when their conscious mind is coming up through alpha. That's why the first hour of the morning is a powerful time for stimulating superconscious creativity. That's why it's so important to write and to rewrite our goals, because every time we rewrite our goals, we stimulate the superconscious. It's so important to visualize the ideal results that we want, because visualization is one of the most powerful stimuli to the superconscious. Every time we create a clear mental picture of what we want to be, have, or do, it stimulates the superconscious into activation. So, to just basically recap, remember creativity cannot be forced. That each one of us is a genius, and each one of us has the capability to function at genius levels, irrespective of our past education, our IQ, our intelligence, our previous experience. The most important thing is to absolutely believe that you have this superconscious capability that you can plug into on demand. And what stimulates that superconscious capability is a complete, calm, confident, expectant faith in your own ability to solve your problems and achieve your goals. The more clear and precise your goals can be, and the more committed you are to accomplishing them, the more rapidly the superconscious capability will work to impel and project those goals into your life.
If you enjoyed this program from Master Motivator and Success Coach Brian Tracy, you are probably the type of high achiever that would benefit from Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program. This one-on-one coaching program is unlike any self-development tool ever offered. Imagine spending 12 weeks with your own coach who has been personally trained by Brian Tracy. Your coach will aid you on building your life strategies, guiding you as you take action steps toward making your greatest desires a reality. If you are like many, you often set goals, but sometimes lack the motivation to carry them through. With the ongoing nurturing and guidance of your personal coach and this outstanding program, you will be accountable for the changes you want to make in your life, and you'll soon see those changes becoming a reality. Created exclusively for Nightingale Connett by Brian Tracy, this program has had massive life-changing results on those that have committed themselves to it. It consists of a minimum of 12 weeks of 30-minute one-on-one telecoaching sessions with a trained personal coach. Accompanying the program are 12 cassette tapes, one for each week of study, along with a guidebook. This extraordinary program focuses on every aspect of your life and helps to integrate and balance your life success skills along with your business growth. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program offers you guidance in the areas of strategic planning, intelligence, health and fitness, power, career success, time management, financial planning, life success, relationships, goal setting, leadership, and building character. Your life will magically transform as you turn your conceptualized thoughts into active steps toward achieving your goals. Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program is one of the most comprehensive, powerful self-development programs to date and is designed to fit your goals, dreams, and desires both personally and professionally. Act now, today, and call in to receive further information and your free personal success profile with one of our trained personal development representatives. Designed with Brian Tracy, this profile will identify your strengths and pinpoint your growth opportunities. We offer this analysis to you at no cost and no obligation, so don't delay. To register for this outstanding coaching program or to receive your free personal success profile, call Nightingale Conet now at this number, 1-877-297-9799. That's 1-877-297-9799 and ask for Brian Tracy's personal success coaching profile. It's one phone call that could change your life.